Tonight's program. My name is Mike Molloy. Thanks for tuning in. Let's see if we can get through the entire 3 hours tonight without a major screw up. Oh my God. Hey, listen, did you hear September? I think it was September. It was the best September at the New York Stock Exchange in 71 years. Wow. Man. That is so cool. What is that, 1939? Gosh. Makes you feel good, doesn't it? Huh? We are less than a month away from what is being billed as the election in which the Democrats are expected to crash and burn. And as Michael Moore says, sadly, it's a situation the Democrats have brought upon themselves, even though the majority of the Democrats didn't create the mess that we're in. But there is something he's got to think. Five things Democrats can do to turn it around by November 2nd. He's got five simple things here. And I'm just astonished that the Democrats have not, you know, come up with this on their own. Number one, media wall-to-wall TV ads, internet videos, appearances hammering who the hell put us in the misery we're in. As Michael says, we Americans have very short attention spans. People need to be reminded over and over that it was the Republicans who concocted and led the unnecessary invasion of two countries, putting us in our longest war ever. Wars that will eventually cost us over $3 trillion. Bush and company also caused the biggest collapse of our economy since the Great Depression. Moore says, I don't know a single person in Hollywood who wouldn't shoot and produce those spots for you for free, Democrats. Don't pull a single punch on this. Quit being a bunch of wimps and let the bastards have it. The public will be astonished that you found your courage and your spine. Try to be Muhammad Ali, not Ally McBeal, huh? You think? Number two, indict the criminals. Announce that the Justice Department will seek indictments against both those who caused the economic collapse and those who became wartime profiteers. Call it for what it is. Organized crime. Use the RICO statutes. Use the basic laws to make fraud of any kind of crime. Get in the face of those who stole the billions. Make them pay for it. And the people will love you. We want Dirty Harry, not Dirty Dancing. Number three, announce a moratorium on all family home foreclosures. Last month, August, well, now it's month before last, there were more home foreclosures than in any month in U.S. history. Worse than any month in the worst year ever, 2009. And the bleeding hasn't stopped. It's only gotten worse. And now, this week, two of the largest crime organizations who are throwing hundreds of thousands of people out of their homes, GMAC and J.P. Morgan Chase, and now joined by Bank America, have been forced to momentarily stop doing this. Turns out they don't really have the paperwork to prove they actually own these houses. It's madness. So if you do one thing for the middle class this week, Democrats, do this. It would take an hour of your time to drop the decree and issue it. We'd rather watch It's a Wonderful Life than Poltergeist, right? Number four, announce a new 21st Century WPA, Works Projects Administration. Who's hiring? The government is hiring. Put together a simple plan to hire enough people to repair our roads, fix up our aging schools, rebuild our infrastructure. Fund this by taxing the richest 1% who have more financial wealth than 95% of Americans combined. You teabag stupid people. Don't you get that? Oh, well. Michael writes, unemployment would drop to 5%. Can you pass it? Well, you sure can't unless you try. And as you're trying, announce that you will force the Republican senators, who have up till now just simply had to say they intended to filibuster, to kill a bill, to actually have to filibuster. Make them stand on the floor of the Senate and read from the phone book 24/7. They won't last a day. And America will see them for who they really are. Number five, declare that no Democrat will accept any Wall Street money in the next election cycle. Pick a day in the coming week. Have all your fellow Democrats in Congress stand in front of the Capitol with President Obama and pledge that if America allows you to retain control of Congress, none of you will take a penny from Wall Street for the 2012 election. Instead, promise to accept donations of only $2, $5, and $10. That's it. You also will pledge not to take a job as a lobbyist or lawyer for any corporation for 10 years after you leave Congress. The message will be a powerful one to the average American, fed up with corrupt political hacks. Act like Honest Abe, not Fast Freddy, and see what happens. Oh, and there are two bonus questions. Here are two bonus questions. Use what sense of humor you have and go after these candidates and their agenda with all the hilarious ridicule they deserve. And quit complaining about the base not doing enough to help you. You want help? Do something this week to earn it. I've offered five suggestions. I'm sure the rest of the base has a few more. Yours, Michael Moore. Well, I find it interesting that a couple of things we've been suggesting on this program for months and months and months and months and months and months is listed in the five suggestions from filmmaker and pissed off guy Michael Moore. But you know what? And this is the utterly and absolutely and totally and completely bizarre part of these five suggestions, any one of which or all of which would work wonders. How many do you think the Democrats or President Obama are going to embrace? Right. None. So we'll see what happens in November, right? Jim DeMint, the crazy senator from South Carolina. Yeah, he's got a new one now. Remember last week we talked about Newt Gingrich is so afraid that Sharia law, Islamic law, is coming to the United States, and Newt says we ought to guard against this, about any Supreme Court justices or federal court judges being appointed who have a plan to introduce Islamic fundamentalist law into our court system. Remember? Create a devil and then pretend like you're fighting against that devil. Way to go, Newt. Jim DeMint isn't going along with that. He wants, like we said the other night, he wants Christian religious law. Over the weekend, Jim attempted to convince a bunch of bobbleheaded pastors in South Carolina that economic issues and moral issues are moral issues at the something called the Greater Freedom Rally at a church in Spartanburg, South Carolina. He implored them, the reverends, to help conservatives retake Congress in November. And in addition to reiterating his anti-choice talking points on abortion, and in addition to backing traditional marriage, according to the Spartanburg Herald Journal, the senator went further. He said, quote, if someone is openly homosexual, they shouldn't be teaching in the classroom. And according to the Spartan Journal or the Herald, Spartan Herald Journal, he holds the same position for unmarried women. If you're openly homosexual or openly an unmarried woman, ta-da, you shouldn't be in the classroom. Why not? Because the unmarried woman might be, you know, having sex with her boyfriend. DeMint said he agreed with the idea of no gay teachers in the schools because government shouldn't be endorsing certain behaviors. DeMint also feels that women should be forced to have their rapist baby and, of course, not be able to teach because once she's unmarried and pregnant, even raped by her daddy, she's a bad role model. This guy is just, this is Senator Dumbass, isn't he?
Border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
It is 21 past the hour. Meg Whitman, isn't she a piece of work? I realize it's something that only applies to people in California, but not really. She wants to be governor of the most populous state in the nation, and aside from her magnificent hypocrisy where it concerned her 9-year employee whom she dumped about a year ago when she decided, well, I'm going to be the next governor. I'm going to spend $120 million. I'm going to be the governor. I got to get rid of this Mexican real quick. A couple of months ago, Meg Whitman released a glossy magazine she called Meg 2010. A New California. According to Chris Kelly at Huffington Post, it wasn't very detailed. Every third page was a picture of a farm or Meg Whitman wearing safety goggles. But anyway, this week, Meg issued the second edition of her magazine. She's tweaked it a bit since she won the Republican nomination. And she's sticking to the single most expensive proposal of her campaign, which is the total elimination of the state income tax on Meg Whitman. She's also made a teeny tiny adjustment to the justification for cutting her own taxes to zero and changed it from a sleazy trick to a blatant lie. The thing you have to understand is that California taxes two kinds of income the same way. Capital gains, like Meg Whitman makes, and wages, like a nurse makes. Last year, Meg paid 9.3% on whatever she earned from a billion-dollar fortune, not counting what her charitable trust hid in the Cayman Islands. A nurse making $47,000 also paid 9.3%. Sounds about right, huh? A billionaire, capital gains. See, this is where it really... I don't know how it affects you, but it makes me just see red. I get a queasy feeling, like, I don't know, man. I just can't explain it. It's like maybe I want to do something really bad. Oh. So anyway, Meg Whitman paid 9.3% income tax on her massive $1,000 million fortune, and a nurse making $47,000 paid the same thing. But here's Meg's new plan. The nurse still pays 9.3% of her earnings, the nurse, on her own income tax. But Meg Whitman pays 0%. Huh? Isn't that cool? Huh? Let's say Meg has her $1 billion in a Bank of America Growth Maximizer savings account. Last year, married and filing jointly, her California state income tax would have been $90,843. Let's bet that Meg did a little bit better than that. She knows all those insider trading guys from Goldman Sachs. So let's say her investments paid about the same as 10-year treasuries. If she made 3.75%, her California state income tax was $4,295,000 $230. Under Meg's plan, it'll go down to zero. On average, a really experienced California nurse makes $62,400 a year. Her state income tax is $2,032. Under Meg's plan, it would go down to $2,032. Same thing. Another way of looking at these numbers, Meg Whitman's tax cut will save Meg Whitman $4 million a year. Basically, even if she just has her money buried in a stable. And it will save the average working Californian nothing. And it'll cost the state of California billions. So, here's what's changed about the justification for the tax cut in the new issue of Meg Magazine. The first edition said, California is one of the few states in the country that doesn't tax capital gains at a lower rate than traditional income. This trick figure comes from the fact that in some states, the tax on capital gains can't be lower than the tax on traditional income because they're both zero. Another way to look at this stat, 41 states tax capital gains and traditional income at the exact same rate. So by a few, she means 4/5 of the states tax that way. This is double taxation at its worst. No, this is horse hockey at its most specious. Everything gets taxed over and over. Meg pays the liar who writes lies for her. That's taxed. He pays the therapist who helps him live with the guilt. That gets taxed. The therapist buys liquor. That gets taxed. Double taxation isn't an economic argument. It's just something that pollster Frank Luntz made up one day to mess with Joe the plumber's head. California's tax treatment of capital gains is a major impediment to capital formation and investment in new jobs. For example, if a billionaire didn't have to pay taxes, he could hire you to express his dog's anal glands, and you could pay taxes. So Meg wants to align California's tax treatment of capital gains with other competing states. Of course, there's nothing to align with. There are no states, not a single one, where they tax income and don't tax capital gains. More on this when we come back. Stay with us, I'm Michael Malloy.
Sentence me to 20 years of boredom for trying to change the system from within. I'm coming now, I'm coming to reward.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. So not only does Meg Whitman torture her housekeeper, Nikki Diaz, for 9 years, kind of dangling in front of her, maybe I will, maybe I won't. But when the housekeeper finally says, help, I want to become a citizen, Meg throws her to the sharks, because by that time Meg had decided she was going to run for governor, or I'm sorry, Meg decided she was going to buy the governor's office in California. And now it turns out that Meg Whitman has a wonderful plan. No more capital gains taxes, which will save the average working Californian nothing, but will save Meg $4 million a year or more. So, in her first edition of her wonderful magazine, she wrote, California is one of a few states in the country that doesn't tax capital gains at a lower rate than traditional income. In the latest edition, she writes it this way. California is one of the few states in the country that taxes capital gains at a higher rate than traditional income. They don't care about lying, these teabaggers. They don't care about lying, these Republicans. The top 1/5 of 1%, the people in this country that control all of the wealth, care about as much about you as they care about a pile of goat dung laying on a road somewhere in the Middle East. They don't care. They just want to bankrupt the country so they can buy everything at fire sale prices. And if and when this economy ever comes out again, they own it all. Damn, that's a good plan. Woohoo! Meg Whitman, who spent, what did she spend now? $120 million to, what is the governorship pay in California? What's that pay per year? 150? Does it pay that much? I don't even know. 150,000? 200,000? How much does Arnold make, being the governor of California? Meg Whitman is not doing this because she wants to serve her fellow citizen in California. She's doing it to save herself an enormous amount of money. But Meg, come on, if you spend $120 million and your return is, let's be generous and say it's $5 million a year, and what you'll save in capital gains, that only works out to be $20 million. And if you get two terms, that's only $40 million. How do you justify your $120 million outlay unless you have other plans? Something else is afoot. We will watch and report. Meg Whitman is battling. You notice that she looks a little bit more haggard, a little bit more drawn. And I would say this about a man, too. But Meg happens to not be a man. She's a woman. She's a little more haggard, a little more drawn as she battles these charges that she knowingly employed an undocumented immigrant housekeeper, failed to pay a portion of her wages, and then fired her in an act of political damage control. How about that, huh? We didn't get to this last Wednesday, not too much in depth. Michael Falcone at ABC News puts it out there at a news conference in L.A. last Wednesday. Whitman's former housekeeper and nanny, Nikki Diaz, tearfully recounted how in June 2009, she was suddenly terminated by EMEG and her husband, Griffith Harsh. You gotta love that name. Griffith Harsh. After Nikki Diaz said she asked the couple for legal help to obtain U.S. citizenship. Now, according to Nikki Diaz's attorney, you know, that left-wing screaming communist, Gloria Allred, we know about her. Nikki's attorney also alleged that EMEG became aware of her housekeeper's undocumented status years earlier, but, you know, took no action. Remember the Supreme Court justice nominee that Bill Clinton put out there right away? What was her name? And they found out that she had an undocumented worker working for her. And what happened to that woman? Is she still alive? She certainly disappeared. Her political or judicial career came to an absolute brick wall, didn't it? But not EMEG. Oh, no. Anyway, Ms. Diaz told reporters that just a few months before Whitman announced she was running for governor as a Republican, she fired Ms. Diaz after 9 years spent cleaning the couple's home in an upscale Northern California suburb and shuttling their children to and from school and appointments. 9 years. Ms. Diaz said Whitman told her in the summer of 2009, quote, "From now on, you don't know me and I don't know you." Ms. Diaz said, quote, "I was shocked and hurt that Ms. Whitman would treat me this way after 9 years. I realized at that moment that she didn't appreciate my work. I felt like she was throwing me away like a piece of garbage," end quote. And in a statement released after all this came out, EMEG said, quote, "Nikki had falsified the hiring documents and personal information she provided to the employment agency that brought her to us in 2000. Nikki told me that she was admitting her deception now because she was aware that her lie might come out during the campaign." End quote. Oh, EMEG, you're just wonderful. Oh, my God, I love your honesty. I love your brilliance. I love your attempt to save yourself 4, 5, 6, 8 million in capital gains taxes. You just, oh, my God, you're a model. You're a role model. You almost bankrupted eBay. How many hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of people did you fire and lay off and get rid of it at eBay, E-Meg? Huh? How many? Oh, my God! In her statement, E-Meg described Ms. Diaz as, quote, a friend of our family and a faithful employee who had to be fired. She had to be fired once she confessed to being an illegal worker. Oh, no. Tisk, tisk, you're fired. Get out of here. Go away, Nikki. You're going to be a big embarrassment. I'm running for governor. Oh, excuse me. I'm going to try to buy the governor's office. At the news conference, the attorney for Nikki Diaz said E-Meg failed to respond to multiple inquiries by the Social Security Administration warning that the Social Security number Ms. Diaz provided did not match her name. The attorney says she's ready to release a document which confirms those allegations. The attorney said, quote, was Ms. Whitman engaged in her own form of don't ask, don't tell so that she could continue to benefit from the work of a vulnerable and undocumented worker and exploit her while pretending that she didn't know the truth about Nikki's status? End quote. The attorney said that Whitman initially hired Ms. Diaz to work 15 hours a week for $23 an hour, but that over time the family asked Diaz to perform additional duties without paying her for the extra time or providing reimbursement for mileage or anything. The Whitman campaign tried to discredit Nikki Diaz's attorney, calling into question the timing of the allegations and asserting that the high-profile lawyer, Ms. Allred, had ties to California Attorney General Jerry Brown. The evidence? Ta-da! Allred made a financial donation to Brown's campaign in 1982! Woohoo! There you go! How about that? 1982! Oh, and in 2006, too. You know. This is not the first time E-Meg has faced allegations of mistreatment of people it worked for. In 2007, E-Meg allegedly cursed and shoved an eBay employee in a conference room at the company headquarters. The New York Times reported back in June that E-Meg paid the employee, Young Mi Kim, a settlement worth about $250,000. Lunch money for E-Meg. Well, anyway, there you go. E-Meg has been buying a lot of time on Spanish language TV channels in Los Angeles in an attempt to win the Latino vote, which she desperately needs if she is going to succeed Arnold. The teabag world is a strange and wondrous place, is it not? A multi-billionaire does not want to pay as much tax as a working nurse, income tax. The multi-billionaire wants to have that yoke taken from her tired, overworked shoulders. As far as the nurse is concerned, well, if the nurse had been smart, she would have been the CEO of eBay.
Now the hacienda's dark, the town is sleeping. Now the time has come to part, the time for weeping.
Goodbye, Nikki.
Vaya con Dios, my darling.
I never knew you, sweetheart. How do you say, oh, listen to the song.
Vaya con Dios.
My love. Now the village mission bells are softly ringing. If you listen with your heart, you'll hear them singing.
progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, I couldn't even think of her name, but Reg knows. Zoe Baird. Remember Zoe Baird? Where is she now? She's in New York, president of the Markle Foundation, which focuses on how to accelerate the use of information technologies to address critical public needs. Did it, particularly in the areas of health and national security. Zoe Baird. There you go. I, on the other hand, couldn't even remember the woman's name. How quickly we forget. Teabag World. You want to know what it's like in Teabag World? This is what it's going to be like. In South Fulton, Tennessee, a couple, Jean and Paulette Kranick, their house caught fire and it burned down after firefighters were ordered by their bosses not to extinguish the fire. Why? Well, there's a fee involved. Neighbors of the Kranicks, who noticed that the flames had spread to their property, well, they had paid the fee. I think it's $75 a month. They had paid the fee, and so the firefighters saved their house. But as they were putting out the fire at the neighbors, they told the Kranicks, no, sorry, you didn't pay the fee. Sorry. The city manager of South Fulton, Tennessee, a guy named Jeff Vowell, that's his name, said, quote, it's a regrettable situation anytime something like this happens, end quote. Mr. Vowell explained that the county couldn't afford fire putter outer service, and it was too expensive for the city's officers to, you know, get some public fire departments, volunteers, I guess, no volunteers either, to serve the surrounding rural areas, like where the Kranicks lived. So, rural residents were able to get access to firefighter protection, I guess is the right word, by paying a fee. Mr. Ball said, but if they chose not to, we can't make them. Mr. Kranick said the story that he didn't pay the fee is not true. Anyway, the couple does not blame the officers, the firefighters themselves. Mrs. Kranick said, quote, they're doing what they're told to do. It's not their fault. The mayor of South Fulton, David Crocker told local reporters, quote, we're very sorry their house burned, end quote. However, he too stood by the subscription policy, arguing that a pay-as-you-go service is much better. You know, it's private enterprise, you know. Now, there's a P.S. to the story. About 3 hours after the fire began, Mr. Kranick's son, Timothy, allegedly drove to the South Fulton Fire Station and asked for the fire chief, a guy named Wilds. I'm not making these names up. Mr. Wilds. It is alleged that when Mr. Wilds came forward and asked if he could help, Mr. Kranick punched him in the nose. Mr. Crocker, the mayor, Davy Crocker, the mayor said, he just cold-cocked him. Boom! Mr. Kranick, the son, whose house had burned down, allegedly had to be pulled off Mr. Wilds, the fire chief, by other firefighters after having knocked him to the ground. The 44-year-old is said to have been taken to the hospital after injuring his hand from punching the guy right in the nose. The Kranicks, by the way, are temporarily staying in a mobile home. So, all you right-wing, libertarian-loving, Ayn Rand-sucking freak, Rand Paul, Sharon Engel, Christine O'Donnell, Sarah Palin, freaks, there you go. What happens if you can't pay? Because it will come to this. Don't forget, the libertarian, teabagger, Republican, right-wing, neo-fascist plan is to bankrupt the country to the point where nothing will be provided with your tax money. You know why? Because there'll be no tax money. Oh, except, you know, maybe a value-added tax to fund the military. But anything domestically, oh no, oh no, you're on your own. God damn it, they didn't have tax-paid fire departments back when I was a kid. Yes, they did, sir. Oh yeah? Yeah, they didn't have them back around the time of the Civil War, but a lot of people realized it might make sense to have taxpayer-funded things like fire departments, police departments, libraries, schools, roads, bridges, public works projects, mail service, you know, stuff like that. Ladies and gentlemen, kiss it all goodbye. Seriously, kiss it goodbye. And again, I advocate that all you right-wingers, get your asses out there and vote these people in. Do it! Do it! Let's see what happens. Let's see how much damage. See if they can absolutely destroy the country in 2 years. Let's see what they can do. Come on, you boys and girls. You right-wing neo-fascist rat bastards. Come on. Go to the polls. Take your mom and them with you. Get everybody to vote. Let's get rid of these liberal progressive Democrats. What the hell have they ever done, right? Oh, boy, William, we'll take care of that. Well, and by the way, then in 2012, when you go to vote, you're not going to be able to use one of those little rascal scooters that the Social Security Administration is so willing to pay for. No, you'll have to get one of your grandchildren to carry, I guess, because that'll be gone too, right? Stick around, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. Jacksonville Beach wrote in about subscription, Jesus, fire department in South Fulton, Tennessee. And Kevin says, do you think they would let a church burn if the church failed to pay the fee? Probably not, Kevin. Probably not. Russ Feingold, according to The Nation magazine, I think it's a current issue. Feingold has a serious challenger, a Republican millionaire, a teabagger. His name is Ron Johnson? Ron Johnson? Wow. Now, there's a populist name. Think Progress brought to just about everyone's attention that Mr. Johnson's one prominent act of political participation prior to his Senate run is that he testified in front of the Wisconsin State Legislature. He testified against the Wisconsin Child Victims Act. Yeah, he testified against it. The Wisconsin Child Victims Act essentially eliminates the statute of limitations for bringing suit against, quote, any person for injury caused by an adult's sexual contact with anyone under the age of 18, end quote. Eliminates the statute of limitations. Now, those various laws around the country regarding child rape, child sexual abuse, do have statutes of limitations. And that's one of the ways the Catholic Church was able to avoid criminal charges being filed against so many of its sick pedophilic priests by claiming, well, statute of limitations run out now, ha 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 ha. The child, Wisconsin Child Victims Act, it seemed like, I mean, I'm having a hard time here trying to put this into words. Who would not be in favor of a law that ends the statute of limitations where it concerns some perp destroying a child through sexual molestation or rape? I mean, who would be against that? Well, Ron Johnson is the Republican who's surging in the polls against Democratic Senator Russ Feingold. I mean, how does this happen? I get a lot of emails from people. How does this happen? I don't know. Unless, in this case, the people of Wisconsin have gone collectively insane. I don't know. It's not just Wisconsin. We have a governor's race here in Georgia. The incumbent, Sonny Perdue, can't run again. So running against him is a Democrat who was governor for one term, Roy Barnes, Democratic governor. His opponent, his challenger, is a former member of Congress who had to resign from Congress because he was facing criminal investigation. Roy Barnes' opponent for governor had to resign to avoid being investigated. His name is Nathan Deal. This is a guy who over the past 5 or 6 weeks first forgot $1.5 million loan he made to one of his kids, and then forgot a $2.3 million business deal in his financial statement. You see, Nathan Deal keeps leaving things off, and then some Democratic whistleblower or investigative unit will find it. Well, wait a minute, what's it? Oh gosh, I forgot about that. I'm sorry, I forgot about that. So it's not just Wisconsin. Oh, and by the way, Nathan Deal is way ahead of, he's probably 11, 12 percentage points ahead of Roy Barnes. In Wisconsin, Ron Johnson, who is against the Wisconsin Child Victims Act, said in his testimony before the Wisconsin legislature that it was, quote, extremely important to consider the economic havoc and the other victims, end quote, that the new law would, quote, likely create, end quote. Because the law reads, now this shows you how corporate America is pushing your child to the curb. The law says, for the purpose of the statute, the Wisconsin Child Victims Act, person was defined as an individual. And you'd think it'd stop right there, right? An individual. No, no. Corporation, business trust, estate, trust, partnership, limited liability company, association, joint venture, or government, governmental subdivision, agency, or instrumentality, public corporation, or any other legal or commercial entity. Now, I'll be damned, but I just have a hard time seeing a trust raping a child. I just don't see that happening. Do you? I just don't see it happening. But Ron Johnson testified that, oh my goodness, we can't have the Wisconsin Child Victims Act because, well, it's going to interfere. It'll lead to businesses or other organizations that work with children being damaged or destroyed. And it'll send a chilling signal to organizations like the Boy Scouts to not work with children in the future. Oh my God. Does that make a lot of sense? And this clown is leading Russ Feingold, or close to leading him, in the polls. How does this happen? How does this happen? I don't know. But I have something to give you an example. Maybe this will cast shed some light on it. Matt Taibbi, again, writing at Rolling Stone, who is just phenomenal. We'll get to this in a second. It's from the October 15th issue of Rolling Stone. But wait, Neil is in Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, Neil.
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
Fine. A little bit about this Ron Johnson that's running against Feingold.
Yeah, go ahead.
He's a teabagger and a Republican, but he's not putting any Republicans or any logos on his ad to identify which party he's with.
Really?
Yeah. He's totally staying blank on that.
Yeah, well, that's not really a surprise, is it?
No. He keeps talking about how he's how he runs his own business and that.
Yeah.
But he forgets to tell people that when he got married, his wedding present, daddy-in-law gave him a company to run. And the company is a plastics company, and his client, his main client who bought over 90% of the product was his brother-in-law.
Yeah, well, that's called pulling yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he keeps thinking about how he's an accountant and a businessman.
Yeah.
Well, if I had an accountant spending over $4.5 million for a job that only pays $165,000, I'd wonder what kind of accounting classes he went to.
Is that what this Ron Johnson has spent?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
$4.5 million.
And eBay Whitman out in California has spent $120 million. Gosh, yeah. These folks really want the power, don't they?
Well, here's the kicker. He's against the TARP bailout.
Mm-hmm.
But when the funding came out, he's receiving money from all the big TARP banks that received money.
Well, I have to tell you, Neil, I'm shocked. I'm shocked and stunned. Neil, I got to leave you there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back.
Truth seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. By the way, coming up next hour, Bill O'Reilly feels the Malloy lash. Bill O'Reilly of this disgusting, filthy organization. Fox gets the, and Comcast. So stick around. Bill O'Reilly gets his nose bloodied by Mike Malloy coming up next hour. I can't wait. I can't wait until that segment is recorded by one of these right-wing trolls and they send it to O'Reilly. And O'Reilly, sure enough, puts it up on Fox, his Fox program. I love it! Speaking of all that nonsense, Roger is in Santa Monica listening on KTLK. Hey, Roger.
Yeah, Mike. Yeah. A lot of things to talk. I hope I can tell you everything. Okay. In California, you don't have to worry. Whitman and Florina are burning into flames and becoming ashes. Don't have to worry. But then, like you said, Meg Whitman spent 120, 30 million.
Mm-hmm.
That way, I think that O'Donnell, what is her name?
Christine O'Donnell?
Yeah, she's smart. She's also going to lose, but without spending, maybe spending $100. this bitch here get spending $130 million, and then she's going to lose.
Roger, what language. My goodness. Go ahead.
You can't say that word?
Well, it's very sexist.
Yeah, because she, you know, I call her a pit bull.
Pit bull.
You see her face? It's a pit bull face.
Pit bull is good.
Yeah, and then, you know, and another thing, she, you know, nobody talks about the pattern she has. She molested that another girl in eBay, Kim. She was an Asian girl.
She beat her up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then Kim sued Meg Whitman for $250,000.
Yeah, they settled.
And she's still working for eBay, so she's a good worker.
Yeah, she settled out of court.
And then now she abuses this Mexican girl or
right.
Hispanic girl.
Right.
And then all this media is on her side. I wonder, suppose this has happened to Jerry Brown. He had an undocumented worker.
Whitman
would have kept silent. She wouldn't have hired a lawyer and dug up that garbage and exposed him.
Yeah.
And then now she has the gall to, in the debate, asking Jerry Brown, "You did this? you stooped to that level? All crap." Well, she would have done the same thing.
I know.
What's
I know.
Talking
well,
about
well,
rubbish?
Well, just remember, Roger, that Nutmeg is a Republican, and Nutmeg is a very wealthy billionaire Republican. So Nutmeg can do anything she wants. Jerry Brown, on the other hand, is not a billionaire. Jerry Brown is, he's the guy who has, I don't know how much money he has, but he damn sure's not a billionaire. So if he does something, if any Democrat does something, holy Toledo, Katie bar the door, it's all over. Hey, listen, I got to leave there, Roger. Thanks, man. Appreciate you checking in. Cynthia in San Jose. Mike, I just got home from my commute. Listening to your program all the way. And what did I tell you last week, huh? I wrote you, quote, "I pay taxes so the filthy goddamn rich," read Meg Twitman, "don't have to," end quote. Huh? What did I tell you, huh? And as for the Nazi, fascist, pig, Republican, libertarian paradise where we have to pay a fee for fire department protection, what happens when an invalid, say grandma, is home alone babysitting the baby and the house catches fire and she falls out of her wheelchair and can't get herself or the baby out? Oh, I know. They both burn to death. Well, the privatized firemen from the Acme Fire Department Company, Inc., watch it burn to the ground. Isn't the Republican libertarian free market paradise grand? I can't wait! Not. Cynthia in San Jose. Yeah, this is what they're talking about. You crazy right-wingers, you crazy libertarians, this is what you're going to get. And God forbid, it'll be your child or your granny or your spouse who burns to death because one of you forgot to drop the check in the mail. How many times that happened, huh? How many times have you had a stack of bills? Oh, damn, I forgot to drop them in the mail. And if it's close to the due date, what do? You have to get on the horn, right? And you call your credit card company or utility company and say, yo, wait a minute. You know, the check's coming. The check's in the mail. And the person you talk to, first of all, can't understand you. But secondly, says, oh, okay, sure, it's in the mail. And then in the meantime, if it's a check to the Libertarian Private Fire Department Corporation, in the meantime, your house catches on fire? Oh, no! And Granny and the triplets are home. Oh, no! And Granny's taking a nap, and the triplets are fast asleep in the nursery. Whoosh! And they're all gone because the fire department said, oh, wait a minute. Well, a phone call coming in from where? 123 Oak Drive? Let me see here. 123 Oak Drive. No, they didn't pay their $75 this month. Okay, too bad. Click. And there goes Granny and the kids. Oh, well, it's a libertarian paradise, is it not?
He watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
Well, not really, but 25 before the hour. Susan in Madison, Wisconsin writes, Mike, how does this happen about Johnson and Feingold? How does this happen? In spite of Johnson running 10 ads to Feingold's one, I believe Feingold is favored and will get the most votes. However, first, corporations run the polls. Even if Feingold is ahead by a landslide, the corporate polls are manipulated to show Johnson ahead. And number two, on election day, the machines will make sure Johnson wins by flipping the vote. And who can disagree since the polls showed him ahead? We're screwed because the whore media will never report the truth. Susan, Madison, Wisconsin. I got to share this with you. I just have to. Matt Taibbi, this is from Tea and Crackers. In the October 15th issue of Rolling Stone. This is just a little excerpt from it. He says, it's taken three trips to Kentucky, but I'm finally getting my Tea Party epiphany exactly where you'd expect at a Sarah Palin rally. The red-hot mama of American exceptionalism has flown in to speak at something called the National Quartet Convention in Louisville, a gospel music hoedown in a giant convention center filled with thousands of elderly white Southerners. Palin, who earlier this morning held a closed-door fundraiser for Rand Paul, the Tea Party champion running for the U.S. Senate, Palin is railing against the Republican establishment that has just seen Tea Partiers oust entrenched Republican hacks in Delaware and New York. The dingbat revolution, it seems, is nigh. Quote, we're shaking up the good old boys. Palin chortles to the best applause her aging crowd can muster. She then issues an oft-repeated warning to Republican insiders who underestimated the power of the Tea Party Death Star. Buck up, she says, or stay in the truck. Stay in what truck, I wonder. What the hell does that even mean? Scanning the thousands of hopped-up faces in the crowd, I'm immediately struck by two things. One is that there isn't a single black person here. The other is the truly awesome quantity of medical hardware. Seemingly every third person in the place is sucking oxygen from a tank or propping their giant atrophied glutes on motorized wheelchair scooters. As Palin launches into her Ronald Reagan impression, government's not the solution, government's the problem. The person sitting next to me leans over and explains, the scooters, they're here because of Medicare, he whispers helpfully. They have these commercials down here. You won't even have to pay for your scooter. Medicare will pay. Practically everyone in Kentucky has one. A hall full of elderly white people in Medicare-paid scooters, railing against government spending and imagining themselves revolutionaries as they cheer on the vice presidential puppet handpicked by the GOP establishment. If there exists a better snapshot of everything the Tea Party represents, I can't imagine it. After Palin wraps up, I race to the parking lot in search of departing Medicare motor scooter conservatives. I come upon an elderly couple, Janice and David Wheelock, who are fairly itching to share their views. I'm anti-spending and anti-government, crows David, as scooter-bound Janice looks on. The welfare state, it's out of control. Okay, I say, and what do you do for a living? Me? He says proudly. Oh, I'm a property appraiser. Have been my whole life. I frown. Are either of you on Medicare? Silence. Then Janice, a nice enough woman, it seems, slowly raises her hand, offering a faint smile as if to say, you got me. Let me get this straight, I say to David. You've been picking up a check from the government for decades as a tax assessor, and your wife is on Medicare. How can you complain about the welfare state? Well, he says, there's a lot of people on welfare who don't deserve it. Too many people are living off the government. But, I protest, you live off the government. It had been your whole life. Yeah, he says, but I don't make very much. Vast forests have already been sacrificed to the public debate about the Tea Party, what it is, what it means, where it's going. But after lengthy study of the phenomenon, I've concluded that the whole miserable narrative boils down to one stark fact. They're full of blank. Come on, you Tea Partiers! Damn right. Vote these candidates in, you teabagging freaks. And then see if you can keep your little rascal scooters. Huh? Yeah, they run those commercials down here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, too. I don't know if they run them up north, but they, by God, run them here in North Georgia and Tennessee and Kentucky and South Carolina and Mississippi and Alabama. Yes, they do. You know, here in the hotbed of the I hate the government South. Teabagger paradise. Good God. Mark is in Athens, Georgia, listening on XM. Hey, Mark.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Mike. Hey, I was listening and I was listening to the XM radio and it's rare that I'm able to get a whole show from you on it now where we're at, but basically I was listening to the XM radio like I always do on September 23rd. And I was listening to the Tom Hartman program,
uh-huh.
And they mentioned something about the Freedom of Information Act had declassified certain agenda points from the Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld plan of attack on Iraq before it was even part of what was going on in the world.
Right. Well, you weren't surprised by that, were you, Mark?
No, not at all, but I'm really surprised that when the information was released, that I haven't seen any of it in the mainstream media.
Oh, Mark, come on. Don't be surprised. Mainstream media, who owns NBC? Well, up until the Comcast deal is completed, who owns NBC? General Electric. What is General?
Right.
General Electric is known for refrigerators, oven stoves, and death-dealing weapons of mass destruction. So you can bet your bottom dollar that mainstream media is not going to report this the way you or I would like to see it reported. And I think the bottom line is this. Everybody knows Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld were murderous war criminals and liars. But the Democratic Party, when they had a chance, made it very clear they weren't going to do anything. So,
I mean, screaming for blood is what I'm waiting to hear from people for.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is, it's ridiculous. It's right there. I mean, I'm looking at it right now on the National Security Archive page.
Right.
And I mean, it's just amazing. And you can see it with the timeline and everything. It's,
well, Bill Clinton decided not to continue the investigation of George Herbert Walker Bush and his crew of murderers who decimated Central America during the Iran-Contra years. That one was swept under the rug. George Herbert Walker Bush should have been dragged if necessary before a criminal court to explain why he and Oliver North and Reagan and the rest of these monsters ordered the deaths of up to a quarter of a million or half a million Central Americans. But they got away with it, too. Democrats don't pursue these things. And what was the payoff to Clinton for allowing Pappy Bush off the hook? Ah, you remember what the payoff was, right? The Republicans paid him back by going after him because he and his girlfriend, well, you know, that kind of stuff. Oh, my God. Mark, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Chris is in Belleville, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, Chris.
Hi.
Hi,
Mike. Hi. I'm calling about the bill that you were talking about with Ron Johnson.
Yeah.
Voting against or testifying against it.
Right.
The main thrust of it for him was that manufacturers were going to be liable for things that they had made years and years earlier.
Uh-huh.
And the main thing of the bill had to do with lead paint poisoning.
Lead paint poisoning, right.
Putting lead in paint.
Right.
I think they stopped doing that back in 76 or so.
Yeah,
but there's still
a
lot of that lead paint out there, and kids are still being damaged by it. And the manufacturers don't want to be held responsible for someone damaged now from paint that they made, you know, 20, 30 years
ago. So that was his concern about the part of the law that said corporations who commit acts against children. I see. Mr. Johnson, Chris, has made himself pretty clear. He hates children.
Yeah. He's a corporate guy, and profits are always ahead of anybody. So
sure.
That was the reasoning that the manufacturers and corporations were thrown in there.
I got you. All right. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate that. Take care. In New York, Reg writes, yeah, we get the little scooter ads, too. Over and over and over. I started watching those. There's another one out now. And I see these things because I watch CNN occasionally during the day, late morning. Late morning is when these ads, a lot of these ads pop up. And not only do they have the scooter ads now, but they also have these bathroom ads where a special bathroom for people who might need help getting into a bathroom. The bathtub has a little door on it. And then the one I really like is the one that Medicare will pay for, the chair lift that goes up your stairs. It goes from the main floor of your house up to the floor where the bedrooms are or whatever. But those are paid for now too. Hot damn. I wonder what these right wingers are going to do when all of a sudden there's no Medicare to pay for all these helper devices. You know what I'm saying? We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Don't forget, next hour, Bill O'Reilly will field the Malloy Lash. Oh, yes! So stick around for that. Sharon Angle, the psychopathic teabagger out in Nevada. One of the greatest open secrets of this campaign is that Sharon Angle's primary income comes from her husband's federal pension. I get this from Anton, who writes to me. He says, since neither she nor her husband is currently working, I can only assume that she gets health care from this federal pension, too. Now, think about that, Anton writes. The cornerstone of her campaign is that the public has become too dependent on government. She wants to end Social Security and Medicare. She says she would have voted against the extension of unemployment benefits as well. And yet she gladly gets a federal paycheck for life and probably some kind of government subsidized health care as well. This is the same woman who warns us about the evils of socialized Obamacare. In other words, her primary financial needs and health care needs are taken care of for life because of her federal pension. She is like someone calling for the prohibition of alcohol while comfortably seated at the end of a bar taking sips of a cold beer between rants about the evils of demon rum. Yeah, or worse, Anton. Teabaggers. And Palladino, the guy who wants to be governor of New York running against Andrew Cuomo. Palladino is a sick son of a bitch. I mean, he just is. He fancies himself a member of the Soprano family. He's a guy that never could have made the cut to become a made man in the mafia. But he likes to think of it that way. You know, hey, man, you know, when you tell the reporter that he was going to take him out, you know, if you do any more stories about my stepdaughter who got, daughter as a result of my love liaison with my girlfriend, the guy, you know, you do any more stories about that, I'm going to take you out. And the reporter said, what do you mean by that? And Palladino said, watch. Woo! Damn! Here's what this guy is like. He sent to his friends a photo showing a group of black men trying to get out of the way of an airplane that is apparently moving across the field. The caption underneath reads, run, N-words, run. Here's another example. A doctored photo of President Miss Obama showing the president in a stereotypical pimp's costume holding the hand of the first lady who's dressed as a prostitute in a grotesquely revealing outfit. This is Pelosi. This is a guy that wants to be governor of New York who's just doing great, thank you. Here's another example. A video clip of a nude couple engaged in intercourse with the title Miss France Blanked. Mr. Palladino characterized that one as a keeper. Here's another example. An image showing a woman performing a sexual act on a horse. This is a guy who wants to be governor of New York. He's going to take a baseball bat. Now, granted, the legislature in New York is about as dysfunctional as the legislature here in Georgia. So you New Yorkers, go ahead, vote this guy in. Yeah, go ahead. I want to see it. The images and videos, as Bob Herbert had this in the column New York Times last week. But those images and videos are so blatantly hostile to blacks and women. You got to wonder what Palladino's real mission is. Huh? It's astounding. Oh, by the way, he also promises that one of his first acts as governor would be to cut Medicaid by $20 billion. Now, Medicaid, of course, provides health services to the poor. Where it concerns abortion, Mr. Palladino, being a good Catholic, you know, he's opposed to abortion and everything, including rape and incest, right? Huh? Your brother does you? Have the kid. What? Nice. Nice. As Bob Herbert writes, as for the poor, Michael Caputo, Palladino's campaign manager, said that Mr. Palladino has at times not fully explained his expansive plans for welfare recipients, like, you know, failing public school students included, and men and women who receive unemployment benefits. Caputo said Governor Palladino would ask parents of struggling students to send them to state-sponsored boarding schools, which would also house children taken from their parents because of social service or child welfare reasons. Right? We're going to put them over here in these institutions, right? You know what I'm saying? Mr. Caputo said all recipients of long-term unemployment insurance or welfare services would be required to work in government programs in order to get the benefits. You know, you're disabled, what? You got your leg shot off in, where was it, Iraq? One of them places? Well, guess what? You get to work for the state. That's what you do. And the retraining programs, that would include people who are already very well educated. If you have a degree from a university, maybe two or three degrees, and just can't get hired, you will go to a re-education camp. Palladino. Pol Pot. They both start with a P. I'll be damned. Re-education, you're right. Bob Herbert winds up by saying, I don't think voters quite know what they might be getting with Mr. Palladino. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm just saying, you know, go ahead, vote for these rat bastards, man. Vote for all of them, right? Let's get this ship of state sunk as quick as we can, right? Oh, man, you kidding me or what? Stick around. Next hour, I'm going to cut Bill O'Reilly a new body orifice. You right-wing bloggers, get your machines ready. Here it comes, you punks. It is 7 past the hour. Now, I mentioned earlier in the program about the fact that every major contender for the 2012 Republican presidential nomination who isn't currently holding office and isn't named Mitt Romney is now a paid contributor to Fox News, right? Let me reverse the sentence, make it a little easier to understand. Every single 2012 Republican presidential nominee or would-be nominee, you know, the ones who are seeking, the contenders, all right, they all, with the exception of Mitt Romney, work for Fox News. Now, just to make sure you got that firmly ensconced in your brain earlier in the program, or if you're just tuning in, that's bad enough. As a matter of fact, that's pretty scary. Who was it that said the Republican Party now is simply a subsidiary of Fox Corporation? I can't call them Fox News. The sons of bitches are no more about news than I'm about. Than I'm about what? Eating needles. All right? As bad as that is, in this morning's New York Times, there is a piece by Brian Stetler about, indirectly, what Brian is writing is that Keith Olbermann and everybody else who works at MSNBC, their jobs may be in jeopardy. It depends on whether or not Keith Olbermann and probably at some point the rest of the folks. Although Keith Olbermann is the one who is the point man for criticizing Bill O'Reilly, for example, over at Fox News. But the question seems to be, how much longer will the employees, on-air employees of MSNBC, which would be Chris Matthews and Olbermann and Rachel, you know, the ones whose programs are really intense and really get to the point of attacking, when necessary, and rightly so, some of these thugs on Fox. How much longer are they going to be able to do that before they're fired? What, you say? Where is Malloy coming up with this? All right. Brian Stetler, this morning's media column, New York Times, writes that criticizing Fox News is you know, a sport for people like Keith Olbermann. He takes on Bill O'Reilly a lot. He also takes on Glenn Beck, the suicide-prone moron, who, religious freak, the comedian. I don't know what the hell he is. Entertainer? He's insane, whatever he is, Beck. But Olbermann takes all these people on. Big problem coming like a freight train. Comcast is about to become, with government approval, and there's no reason the government won't approve it, Comcast Corporation is about to wind up with a majority stake in NBC Universal. NBC Universal, of course, owns MSNBC. It is owned in turn by General Electric. Now, what is happening here? See, nobody pays attention to this stuff. It's on the business pages. When Comcast becomes a major stakeholder, a major stock owner, I think it's 51%, will go to Comcast. The other 49 will remain with GE. When that happens, NBC becomes a property of Comcast. If you don't know about Comcast Corporation, it's the largest cable operator and the largest home internet service provider in the United States. Okay? Largest cable operator, largest home internet service provider. It provides cable television, broadband internet, telephone service to both residential and commercial customers in 39 states, District of Columbia. It also has significant holdings in networks like E! Entertainment Television, Style Network, G4, Golf Channel, Versus. It also is involved in content distribution and related businesses. It's a behemoth. How often do we talk about Comcast? Never? Well, Comcast is about to become the major stakeholder in NBC. When that happens, Keith Olbermann is going to have to stop attacking O'Reilly and Beck and the rest of them. Why, you say? Oh, please! Um, As a distributor of cable programming, Comcast is in business with Fox. And Fox's parent corporation, or parent company, the News Corporation. The business interests of Comcast and the News Corporation were brought to light recently in a lawsuit by a guy named Barry Nolan, a Comcast employee, whose protest of O'Reilly cost Barry Nolan a $200,000 a year job. He got fired. Nolan protested the firing. He went to court, and last month he lost the case. Doon, 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 doon. Now, what happened to Barry Nolan? Nolan, you know, unlike, say, Oberman, and I say this with the realities of what part of what Oberman has been trying to do, he righteously attacks Bill O'Reilly. O'Reilly is a freak, a moron, a liar, a cheat, a sneak, a neo-fascist, a serial, apparently, sexual predator, a harasser, any of that stuff. That's Bill O'Reilly. So in his criticisms of O'Reilly, as in his criticisms of Beck and the rest of these monkeys over at Fox, Oberman has been righteous in his attacks and very legitimate in his attacks. On the other hand, there is the intended or otherwise consequence when you go after, when you're on television like Keith and you go after these freaks on Fox, it tends to bump up your ratings a little bit. Everybody starts saying, wait a minute, who's this Keith Oberman? That's just, I don't think that's Oberman's main thrust. It is a byproduct. All right. Barry Nolan had none of that. Barry Nolan did not have a television program. But he took on O'Reilly in 2008. He was the host of a talk show for a Comcast regional channel. Okay, regional. All right, a Midwest television that nobody sees unless you happen to live in a certain region. Okay? It was called CN8 at the time. That was the name of the channel. So Barry became really pissed off when the New England chapter of the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, the Emmy people, of which he was a member, decided to give an award to Bill O'Reilly, an Emmy to O'Reilly. Okay. To Barry Nolan, O'Reilly was a bully who played and plays loose with the facts, which is the Times way, it's Brian Stetler's way of staying within the bounds of journalism. I'll just say it out. O'Reilly's a goddamn liar. He is an absolute, filthy, disgusting liar. Okay? But the Times says he played loose with the facts, according to Nolan. And as a result of that, he was unfit for an Emmy, for an award. Well, hell yes! I mean, if you were on the Emmy committee, not you right-wing thugs who listen to this program, but you normal people, if you were on the Emmy committee, would you give an Emmy to this jack-legged freak? This neo-fascist Bill O'Reilly, this serial, what is he, a loofah, he wanted to get the woman, his employee in the bath, in the shower, and scrub her loofah with his falafel. Well, Jesus, God, this guy's going to get an award. Why, of course he is. He works for Fox. Well, Barry Nolan said, no, 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 no. Now, what happened to Barry Nolan? When we come back, I'll tell you.
There are people who are questioning our great TV God. Everybody be careful. Everybody be very careful. Stay tuned to your TV. There are ponies who are talking. There are wasters who read. There are people here who do not even own a TV. Everybody be careful. Oh, everybody be careful. Oh, everybody be careful.
Everything I know about my country, I learned on TV. The man on the screen tells me who is our enemy. They say that we are free and we must fight to be number one. So when the army calls, I'll grab my TV, my car and my gun. And the TV God watches over me, opens up my eyes, shows me how to see all around the world, every night and day.
radio right from the left. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. All right. So Comcast, the nation's largest cable operator and home internet service provider. It does, in the United States, it does cable television, internet, telephone service, yada, yada, yada. Had an employee named Brian Nolan, or Barry Nolan, who protested Bill O'Reilly. And as a result, Mr. Nolan was fired from his $200,000 a year job to, you know, have the temerity to protest O'Reilly getting an Emmy. To Mr. Nolan, O'Reilly, Brian Stetler writes in this morning's New York Times, O'Reilly was a bully who played loose with the truth. He was unfit for an award. So Nolan spoke up, not on Comcast airwaves, no, but in a series of email messages from his Comcast account, petitioning the Academy's board members and complaining about the award in a newspaper interview, right? Comcast later said in a legal filing that Mr. Nolan's protest, Barry Nolan's protest, quote, jeopardized and harmed the business and economic interests of the company because Comcast and Fox were, quote, actively engaged in contract renewal negotiations at the time of Nolan's protest, end quote, which is, that may be factually correct, but it's hog snot. Absolute bull hockey. Now keep in mind, Rupert Murdoch's fascist organization, the News Corporation, that employs every single Republican hopeful wannabe nominee for 2012, with the exception of Mitt Romney. News Corporation is one of the biggest suppliers of content to Comcast. They have contracts worth hundreds of millions of dollars. This is a case of Comcast servicing Fox and Fox servicing Comcast, if you get my drift. Days before the awards show, which was to be televised by CNN8, this little regional network that Nolan worked for, Nolan's boss counseled him not to create, quote, a scene, end quote, or involve Comcast in his protest. Mr. Nolan says he did not. He simply handed out pamphlets that quoted Mr. O'Reilly's broadcast and also quoted a harassment, sexual harassment lawsuit, I think it was sexual harassment, leveled at Mr. O'Reilly in 2004. Remember, that was the loofah thing, wasn't it, Kathy? The falafel, he wanted to stand in the shower behind his employee and massage her falafels with his loofah or so, whatever it was. This is a sick bastard, O'Reilly. I mean, this is a real degenerate. So anyway, Barry Nolan handed out pamphlets that quoted O'Reilly's broadcast, used O'Reilly's words, and he stood up and walked away from his seat at Comcast table when the award was presented. He walked out. Oh, no! 2 days after that event, he was suspended for 2 weeks without pay. Now, according to Brian Stetler, writing in this morning's New York Times, documents that were unearthed in the lawsuit that Barry Nolan filed revealed how prickly, don't you love that word, how prickly Mr. O'Reilly can be when attacked. No, Brian, I'm sorry. I realize you write for a big newspaper, and I just have a little broadcast program here. No, you don't call that prickly. You call that being an arrogant son of a bitch. That's what you call it. You call it being an arrogant, bullheaded bastard. That's what O'Reilly is. He's a liar. He is a serial sexual predator. He's scum. He sucks. But he also brings in a lot of money for Fox, right? So who's going to win here? You're way ahead of me in this story, aren't you, Truth Seeker? You know who's going to win. So O'Reilly sent a complaint about Barry Nolan straight to the chief executive of Comcast, Brian Roberts. On a corporate letterhead, O'Reilly wrote that he and Fox News that he and Fox News considered Comcast to be, quote, an excellent business partner. And for that reason, quote, it was puzzling to see Mr. Nolan, quote, use Comcast corporate assets to attack me and Fox News Channel. That's what O'Reilly said. Now, the attack, don't forget, the attack was based on O'Reilly's own words, which were lies, distortion. It's just a typical O'Reilly program. And the fact that Barry Nolan, as a board member of the Emmy committee, petitioned his fellow board members not to award this rat bastard an Emmy. Now, you got to wonder why O'Reilly would want an Emmy. He's already lied and said he won a Peabody. Remember, right? O'Reilly defines the word lying snake. So anyway, O'Reilly writes a letter to Comcast president and says, quote, all of us here, that's at Fox Channel, hope this situation will subside. And that is why I'm bringing it to your attention, O'Reilly wrote. Well, guess what happened next? Stick around.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So back to the saga of Barry Nolan. An employee making $200,000 a year working for Comcast. And Barry Nolan, who was on the board of the New England chapter of the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, the New England chapter of the Emmy Committee, and didn't like the fact that Bill O'Reilly had been nominated by that committee for an Emmy, and he protested. He notified the other members, and he was fired by Comcast. He was suspended when Comcast realized that, uh-oh, he may have pissed off the great white Bill O'Reilly. And Bill O'Reilly is known in the business as a whiner. He's a huge baby. He's just an absolute crybaby. You let somebody say anything nasty about him on television, and Bill O'Reilly will run to the nearest mommy or daddy figure with his thumb in his mouth, screaming about how unfair it all is and that something should be done about that bully, Keith Olbermann, or in this case, that bully, Barry Nolan. Oh, my goodness. Somebody said bad things about me, and I'm Bill O'Reilly, loofah man. Nobody talks about me that way, right? So Barry Nolan lost his job. Asked what he thought happened, and again, I'm quoting Brian Stetler in this morning's New York Times, asked what he thought happened, Nolan said, quote, O'Reilly threw a little fit and wrote a letter to Brian Roberts, the head of the CEO of Comcast, and inferred in lawyerly language that this would have an effect on our business relationship. And Brian Roberts, the head of Comcast, in what I think is a kind of gutless caving to a man like O'Reilly, says, fire the guy. Now, when Comcast was presented with that version of events, they said in a statement, quote, Barry Nolan was terminated by CN8, the Comcast-owned regional network, for the reasons he was told, insubordination, end quote. Why, of course. He was instructed not to complain about a lying son of a bitch on Fox Channel, a bully, someone who has had at least one lawsuit, possibly more, that were settled out of court for sexual harassment, employees! He's a whiner, a neo-fascist, O'Reilly is, all of the above. And Barry Nolan, what did Barry Nolan say the things I'm saying? No! All he did was protest to the board of the New England Emmy committee and saying, look, this guy doesn't deserve anything. What do you mean an Emmy? And this is what happened to him. So, in a lawsuit, Nolan accused Comcast of interfering with his free speech rights. Comcast called that claim baseless. And a couple of weeks ago, on September 21st, a district court judge struck down Barry Nolan's lawsuit, finding that Nolan's employment agreement allowed Comcast to terminate him, quote, for any reason or no reason at all, end quote. Jesus, God. A couple of days ago, Nolan said he intended to appeal. Now, Nolan's concern here, he said that he feared Comcast's takeover of NBC Universal. He's afraid of it because of what it might mean for people like Keith Olbermann and other critics of Fox. Barry Nolan said, quote, under Comcast, is this the way the news division is going to be run? End quote. David Cohen, an executive vice president for Comcast, said, quote, we have been quite clear about our irrevocable intent to preserve the journalistic independence of NBC News, even making a written commitment on the same day we announced the transaction to that effect, end quote. In May, Mr. Roberts, the CEO of Comcast, Brian Roberts, was asked in an onstage interview at a cable conference about the news division and said the following, quote, this is the head of Comcast, quote, the single most awesome asset that comes from this deal is NBC News, end quote. In any case, Keith Olbermann said in an email message on Sunday to Brian Stetler at the New York Times that there was no comparison between him and Barry Nolan. Olbermann wrote, quote, I've run into O'Reilly many times in public at Yankee Stadium as recently as a month ago and never have instigated and never would dream of instigating something like that. For that matter, I don't think Bill would either, end quote. Now, by that, I think Olbermann means, what, a lawsuit or a protest to the Emmy Awards Committee in the Northeast that Bill O'Reilly, being the rat bastard that he is, only tarnishes the image of the Emmys when he is nominated and given even a regional award. What does Keith Olbermann mean? Now, as much as I love Olbermann's program, I really do. I think it's one of the best pieces of television on television. And is a particularly interesting lead-in to Rachel's program. You know, I like both of them. I think what Keith Olbermann is, if nothing else, is a realist. He used to work for Fox News in the sports division. He understands. He knows. So is Keith Olbermann's statement kind of whistling past the graveyard sort of remark? Well, I read it to Bill O'Reilly all the time, and, you know, he would never do anything like that to me. I wouldn't do anything like that to him. Bang, bada-boom, bada-bing. Huh? Bill O'Reilly is so thin-skinned, you can see his circulatory system working. Anytime anyone says anything that O'Reilly thinks might, you know, get some national publicity negative about him, O'Reilly loses his bowels and starts sending threatening letters or telling people, I'll have this person fired. Well, I'll do this. I'll do that. I'll climb Mount Everest. I'll scream from the top of Mount Everest that so-and-so is a liar. I'm Bill O'Reilly. Nobody talks this way about me. Wow. Gosh. So, as Fox and Rupert Murdoch continue to take over more and more media globally. This is the sort of thing to expect. In the UK, the new conservative government of the UK has decided to start paring back the amount of money that goes from the government to the BBC. The BBC. Why? Because the BBC competes with Fox's operation, Murdoch's operation, in the UK and globally. So rather than follow these sacrosanct, hallowed, free market systems that these capitalistic, fascist bastards are always talking about. No. Those rules are for somebody else to play by. If you're Rupert Murdoch, you assist in getting a conservative government elected in the UK, and one of the first orders of business is to start cutting back on the public funding of the BBC, because it is competing with Murdoch's operation in the UK. Astonishing. And yet, this is the way the game is played. And the teabag freaks in this country who wander around bumping into each other with snot dribbling out of their noses and signs held high with, in so many instances, misspellings or filthy racist symbols. Oh, we're not racist! These drones, these morons are assisting in this. But the bottom line for teabaggers, they're like fundamentalist Christians. There is no countervailing argument. There is nothing you can say to a teabagger about his or her politics to enlighten them. You can't go up to one of these brain-dead idiots and say, look, do you understand that you are working against your own best economic and social interests and your children's and your grandchildren's? Don't you get that? And they'll just look at you and say, well, I'm against cap and trade. What's that? It's that thing. It's the socialist Obama thing. That's what. I want my country back. That's the kind of response you get, you say. And they will vote for O'Donnell. What's her name? Catherine O'Donnell. They will vote for Sharon Angle. They will vote for Jim DeMint. They will vote for these right-wing morons. They will vote for Rand Paul. And as they slice their own jugulars wide open and gush blood all over the street, they're also slicing yours and mine. Welcome back, 10 before the hour. So, regarding Comcast and Fox working together, or the News Corporation working together, to utterly silence dissent in this country. This is, you know, a lot of people always thought, well, dissent can only be silenced by some fascist regime that brings in the military. And anyone who leads an underground cell that might be fighting for freedom, like during World War II, the Yugoslav partisans, the French partisans, the it just goes on and on, the Finnish partisans, the Bulgarian partisans, the Italian partisans, all those groups, those national groups that were working to underground to fight the Nazis. And as each little cell of these resistance fighters was discovered, of course, they would be dragged out and executed, and then the Nazis would go into the village where these people might have been operating from, and executed 300-500 men, women, and children as an example. That's the movie version of how you quiet any kind of dissent, resistance, or counter-revolution against fascism, right? But that's the movies. That's the way it used to be. And I'm not saying it wasn't that way 60 years ago, but it's not that way now. How do you do it now? First of all, your name has to be Rupert Murdoch or something similar to that. And then all you do is what Joseph Goebbels led the Nazi party to do. You start flooding the airwaves with any kind of lies and propaganda. You hire a whole packet of shills, goofballs, idiots, liars, distorters, molesters, sexual predators. You put them all to work. You give them access to millions of people by virtue of your FCC license to broadcast or telecast. You become so huge, you put so much money into it, that anyone wanting to compete on a fair and balanced basis, you drive out of business with your money, because you can do that in a capitalist system. And the one or two or six who happen to squeak through and continue to provide resistance, fire them, sue them, shut them up. But you never, ever, 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 ever bring in the army or the military. Never. Even though you would if you could. But what do you do with the military in a regime that is going from a form of representative government to pure fascism? You keep the military occupied. Send them away. Come up with wars in, I don't know, very strange, faraway places like Afghanistan or Iraq. That's where you send the military. Repeatedly. And what is your purpose? To bring freedom to the Afghans so they can fly kites. No. To make sure that the Iraqis throw off their the dictator. Oh, it has nothing to do with anything else. No, of course not. So you occupy the military someplace else. Meanwhile, the corporatists, the capitalists back in the country you are seeking to completely dominate and destroy and turn into your own little fascist playground, the media back in that country is relentless. You spend whatever amount of money it takes. If your name is the Koch brothers, or if your name, whatever these right-wing funders of this stuff for the past decade, two decades, three decades, you pump all the money that needs to be pumped into it. Because the ultimate reward for you and your fascist friends is beyond belief. You own everything then! So, to the Keith Obermans and Rachel Maddows and the people that provide even the slightest bit of dissent through media outlets that have even remote connections to Fox, to Comcast, to go down the list. You make your own list. To those people who are still trying to voice some kind of dissent, beware. Beware, because I can't think of a more specific and direct case that shows how this works in the case of Barry Nolan, who had the temerity to suggest that a lying bastard like Bill O'Reilly should not be rewarded with an Emmy, regional or otherwise. That he should, in fact, be called out for the lies and distortions he puts out there every single day. Courtesy of Rupert Murdoch. And for his attempt to bring that to people's awareness, Mr. Barry Nolan was fired, and the courts upheld the firing. There you go. Ay, 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 ay. Well, that's one thing we don't have to worry about on this little program, right? Huh? That Comcast would ever say, fire him!
Let's see. Who?
That's right. They would say, Malloy, who? The only people that ever bring us to mega media's attention are these little rat-infested websites, these little right-wing bloggers who will...
Looky here. Quick, send it to Bill O'Reilly. Quick, send it to...
Who's that freakish bastard, that radio talk show host that was on Fox that the one time I went on? What was his name?
Hugh Hewitt.
I think it's another one, but... Yeah, Hewitt reminds me of somebody who's had just one too many, is out behind the car leaning over. Hugh Hewitt! All right, truth seekers, enough fun and frivolity. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Who?
Why so?